I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 3rd of February. Did you know that 83.3 million Americans own dogs and 6 to 8 million dogs and cats enter shelters each year, and 25% of those are purebred dogs? KP and I are both dog lovers. As you know, give us a chance to do a show on dogs, and we're ready to do it. And news that for the first time ever, all American dogs, mixed breed dogs, will be allowed to participate in the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show on February 8th would naturally catch our attention. Mutts will join the purebreds in the first Masters Agility Championship, which is a skills-based competition that's about brains and speed. The chair of Westminster, Tom Bradley, said that purebred dogs have taken a bit of a rap recently. It may be one of the reasons that mixed breed dogs are being given a slight entry to the big dog show. There is a concern, of course, about the number of dogs who are in shelters and who are euthanized. So this hour, we have a lot of different issues that we're going to be talking about. Is there a place for purebred dogs? We'll do our part, of course, to get shelter dogs adopted. In fact, one of the so cutest in the studio with us, Beetle, is here. Beetle is from the Wisconsin Humane Society and is a two-month-old female terrier shepherd mix, weighing 13 pounds. Beetle's talking. Weighing 13 pounds, and Beetle will be on our Facebook page momentarily in the studio behind the microphone so you can see her. We have two guests with us, one for part of the hour and one for the full hour. Ann Reed, who's joined us before, executive director of the Wisconsin Humane Society, which is Wisconsin's oldest and largest animal welfare organization. Society has been around for more than 130 years, saving the lives of animals in need. There are shelters in Milwaukee, Saukville, and Racine. She also serves on the board of directors of the National Federation of Humane Societies. Anne, it's so nice to have you in our studio again. Hi.
It's great to be back, Kathleen.
You've been doing this for about 4 years now. It was kind of a switch in career for you, wasn't it? Weren't you in the legal profession for a long time?
I was a lawyer for a long time before this, so this is sort of a second professional life for me, and it has been a joy.
I'll bet it's been a joy. You must have been the kind of person who loves animals, and so it was something you jumped at.
I do, but to move into animal welfare from having animals in your personal life to sort of stepping into that realm, it's a whole new world.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And the last time you were with us, John Katz, I think, was on the air, and we had another dog with us. John Katz is also joining us. John has written extensively, of course, about dogs. He's the author of, I think, 22 books, novels, short stories. We had him on most recently with what I think is one of his best books, The Second Chance Dog, A Love Story, because it is also the story of his wife and her dog and how he had to win the affection of his wife's dog when he was courting her in order for them to be together. And it's just a real love story and so nicely done. You can go to bedlamfarm.com to see all that John does. He has farm animals. He's written very moving and important books about the animal-human relationship and dogs particularly. He has rescued dogs, he has purebred dogs, and he has a lot to say about the kind of dog that you should get if you happen to be in the market for a dog. I think you can find that on the web because it's important. It's important information to have. Hello, John.
Hey, Kathleen. It's great to be here. You do anything to get a puppy in your studio.
I know. Isn't it true? I know. It's absolutely true, and I wish you could see this. Well, you can see the puppy on our website.
I
and the last time...
And hi, Ann. I was on with Ann last time.
John, it's great to talk to you.
You too.
Yeah, it's very nice to have you both here. Well, let's start with this decision by Westminster. Maybe people don't care about it, but people who are really in the dog world will think it's a big deal. And let's start with you, for mixed breed dogs to at least be doing agility competition. Is that something that you hail?
Oh, we think it's great. It's absolutely great. You know, a lot of the press around this sort of pits purebred dogs against mixed breed dogs. We are not about that. We love all animals. But the fact is, there's a whole sort of marketing voice out there for purebred dogs. There are associations for every breed. There are, you know, you look at commercials, you look at books, and everything seems to be steering us toward, I'd like a dog, oh, what kind, thinking about the breed. And meanwhile, 53% of the dogs in the country are mixed breed dogs, and they're fantastic. And so to start a greater sort of prominence voice role on the stage for mixed breed dogs and how great they are. We think it's fantastic.
What do you think of the decision, John?
Well, it's interesting. I agree with Ian. You know, it's certainly a nice decision for dog lovers. But I think, you know, it's important to note that the Kennel Club has become a huge, big, gazillion-dollar marketing thing. And the decisions they make about dogs generate a huge amount of money and really reverberate throughout the dog world.
Mm.
So it's become a very big business. There's a big television program and all kinds of elements to it. So there's a huge financial implication behind it. You know, 83 million dogs is a lot of dogs. So it's become a billion-dollar business. I mean, Americans spend as much on animal health care as they do on human health care, practically. So I think that's important, and I think that's probably a lot to do with their decision in broadening their audience. I think at the same time, I think Ian's quite correct. You know, a lot of mixed-breed dogs have wonderful qualities and are, in fact, quite well-bred. And I think people don't realize that. I happen to think breeding is very important on a lot of levels in terms of animal health and temperament. And I think good breeders do a great deal to keep the best traits of dogs like border collies, you know, alive and in the fore. But at the same time, you know, a lot of Americans prefer to rescue a dog. And I have this lunatic mixed breed dog I wrote about.
Yes, you do.
The Rottweiler Shepherd Mix is just a wonderful dog and has really, you know, helped refocus me on the fact that good dogs come in all kinds of packages. I like the idea, too, that, you know, I've talked about this. What's really important, as Anne has suggested, is that people get the right dog.
Mm-hmm.
And think about that and think about for the dog's sake as well as their sake. And I think that's really what I think this has probably helped open people's eyes to that.
Because I guess I wasn't aware when I talked about the number of dogs who enter shelters, 25% of those are purebred dogs. So it is an indication that people are not very careful about choosing their pets, which they need to be it purebred or not. You have to be, this is a very big decision to make in your life, and you can't do it kind of willy-nilly or because, you know, you want your child to have a present of some kind or you want somebody to be happy, let's go get them a puppy. It requires a lot of thought, doesn't it, Anne?
It does, and one of the big misconceptions that's out there is that if we know a dog's breed, we can predict its behavior. Mm-hmm. This is echoing what John said a minute ago. We would never say that about people. We wouldn't say, I want my best friend to be of English ancestry, or I want to marry someone of, you know, of Hawaiian background. But we do that with dogs all the time. We say, I want a this or I want a that. The fact is, every dog is an individual. And boy, you know, we found homes for over 10,000 animals last year, almost half of them dogs. We see a lot of dogs, and we know
10,000.
Yes, Dan? We did. Yes,
oh,
we
my
did.
Goodness.
And that's a lot of the reason that we're so excited about this strong voice for mixed breed animals, because there are 25% of animals of dogs in shelters are purebreds. That means 75% are not. To get those dogs need help, and to get them home, we need to have people really interested in the idea of a mixed breed dog. And the fact is, every mixed breed dog and every purebred dog is an individual, and the one that's right for you depends a lot more on personality than it does on what breed, I'm doing air quotes in the air, what breed that dog is from.
Mm-hmm. And you've written extensively on this. There's even a web thing that I found this morning, John, which is a checklist for prospective dog owners. And the headline is, to get the dog you want, to save a dog from a pound where he faces euthanasia can be a wonderful experience. And you have rescued border collies. You talked about Frida, who was from, who's a mixed dog who had a wild life before your wife found her. But it's also an okay experience to get a great dog from a good breeder, as long as you love the dog and you care for the dog, as long as you both shall live, right?
Right. I think these decisions are so individual, you know, and they're so, you know, I really pity the person setting out to get a dog. It's sort of a minefield out there. And when you go to a place like the Humane Society, you're likely to meet someone like Anne who will say, okay, what kind of a dog do you want? What kind of a dog do you need?
Uh-huh.
They evaluate the dogs. You know, they look at their temperament. They look at their health. They look at their background. And, you know, breeds can be a very important thing to understand. You know, example I like to use, you know, some of the cold weather breeds are very protective around food, not because they're mean, but because in their natural habitat they don't get much food.
Mm.
So when they see food, some of them can really get very excited about it. If you have a child crawling around the floor, you just need to know that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get the dog or couldn't get the dog. It doesn't mean the dog is evil. But you need to know that. Or even a dog like Frida, who's a Rottweiler Shepherd mix. It's a real hunter. She gets incredibly excited when something moves. You just need to know that. And a good breeder, you know, I have a Lenore the Lab I got from a wonderful breeder. You know, when I said to her, I need a dog that can go to readings. I write children's books. I need to have a dog that 40 kids can crawl around. She's been breeding dogs for 10 generations. She said, look, it's a dog that will do that. So that's important. At the same time, you know, it's not even clear what good breeding is anymore. You know, there's so many dogs coming from so many places. So going to a place like the Humane Society, going to a good breeder, going to an experienced rescue group, where there's something that in between you and the emotional impulse of just grabbing a dog, can make all the difference. And people need to know right now, there's a real crisis about acquiring a dog. You know, dog bites are up 47% in America, according to the Center for Disease Control. There's billions of dollars in lawsuits now around dog bites. So these are just things people need to be aware of, because the dogs pay for it when they don't think about it. It's the dogs that get sent back to shelters or put down. So I think a part of animal welfare is just really learning to be thoughtful. And when someone says to me, there's only one way to get a dog, I must only go to a breeder, I must only go to a rescue group, I just get uncomfortable. And I say, look, the best way to get a dog is thoughtfully, wherever you get it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And how do you get people to be thoughtful? Because getting a dog, or a cat for that matter, can be an impulsive decision, and people just come in, oh, let's go get a dog. How do you impress on them how much work is involved in taking care of a dog and the kinds of things that John brought up? If you've got a certain kind of dog, you may want to be careful with children around the food dish or whatever. How do you make that, give that information?
Our adoption counselors are really committed to having that really constructive conversation. You know, there used to be sort of a belief in sheltering, kind of a we'd cross our arms and, you know, show us why you deserve this animal. And we've really taken a much more open approach in recent years because it's so important to us to get animals home. But at the same time, we have to get them home in a way that's safe to them and safe to you. So we actually use a personality profiling approach to all of our dogs and cats. For dogs, it's called Meet Your Match. And we do, when John talks about an evaluation, that's a very specific thing for us and for many other shelters who use the Meet Your Match approach, where we're assessing both the energy level of the dog, high, medium, and low, basically, and then what motivates that dog? So we're watching Beetle around the studio. Beetle is a toy motivated dog.
I've noticed.
She is all about her toys. Other dogs like mine couldn't really care much at all about toys and are oriented very much to people. And a third sort of rough category is dogs that really are pretty independent and kind of hang to themselves. That makes 9 quadrants by the time, you know, 3x3. And because we're so familiar with that way of talking about personalities, we have a way of asking you the questions that will match you up to the right thing. And by the time that conversation goes a little while, we're sort of veering away from breed and more into what we have seen in this particular dog and what you are having, what you have in your life going on and how that fit will work.
Oh, you're very thorough.
It's very important to us to get this right.
That's excellent. Yeah. And in terms of breeders, let's talk about good breeders. You've mentioned the dogs, and given the kind of work that you've done with hospice and with reading programs, you need dogs who are really good with all people. You can't risk having an encounter with a child and a dog that's not a good one, John. So how if you're going to a breeder, how do you make sure that you're getting the right temperament for that kind of work?
Well, I think I look for the kind of thoughtfulness that Anne is describing in her work. I want to talk to someone who's been doing it for a while. I really look for someone who's been doing it for at least 5 generations so he or she can speak to the temperament and health of the dogs over that period. You know, I think good breeders are not really necessarily looking for money. That's not the first thing they worry about. They're much more worried, as Anne is, about is it a good match. I think it's very, you know, it's insane to get a dog over the Internet, as more and more people are doing.
They do? They buy them over the Internet?
Well, they're replacing the puppy mills. Puppy mills are disappearing, and people are just selling them, shipping them online. This is booming. This is a totally unregulated nightmare for people who love dogs. And you know, Americans, I want to say this generously because I don't mean to be patronizing, but Americans are are just insane about the way they acquire animals. I mean, they just don't think about it, most of them. And I think there has to be a process of just the way Ian described it, because a good breeder will do the same thing. A good breeder, will first thing they'll say is, tell me about yourself. You know, how do you live? Where do you live? Do you have kids? What do you want the dog to do? You know, I have a dog, the Border Collie Red, who came from Northern Ireland, and he's a therapy dog now working with veterans. And I just did all of the breeding in this dog. You know, people scream at him and throw things at him, and dementia patients whack him with walkers. And he's just a very grounded animal who is, I trust, in any kind of a situation. That's the kind of thing that a really good breeder can guide you
yes.
with. And probably the Humane Society, too, I'm sure, if there are many mixed breed dogs who have those qualities. But I also think there's this interesting issue that is a complicated one, because I think out of good breeding has come some of the great traits of dogs. You know, the steadfastness of the lab, you know, the work ethic of the border collie, search and rescue kind of dogs. That's where a lot of these traits are really developed and protected, including health issues. So I think it's important not to diss them out of the picture, because everybody thinks, well, you know, I don't want to buy a dog from a breeder. I'd like to rescue one, which is great. I'd love to do that, too. I think both need to survive for dogs to really be healthy and for us to see some of these qualities. Like, people love to see the border collies on television, but they don't think about where they come from. You know, and a dog like that generally comes from a breeder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not for everybody.
Yeah.
The family pet's great to go to the Humane Society and get a dog you can live with. So it's very, very complicated, and I think it's also totally unregulated. I mean, there are a lot of rescue groups that really have a lot of problems in the way they acquire animals and dispense them.
Mm-hmm.
The Humane Society is a really good place to go because they have these kinds of standards, much like good breeders do. That's where I would really go, honestly. I would call Ann, I think.
We're ready for each other.
I would, too. I would call Ann.
And I'm surprised you don't have 20 dogs, Kathleen.
I know. I'm going to.
I
know. I wish I could have hundreds of them, John.
Yeah, I hear your voice. You're the kind of person that should have a dog. More than one.
Yeah, I do have a dog, but I need more than one. That's true.
Right.
All right, let's go to some. We got tons of phone calls and emails. Let's start with an email because it has to do with purebreds, too, and some of what you were both talking about. Becca writes that this is an important topic. She hopes we'll talk about how purebreds have so many health problems, and a lot of the desire for a certain breed perpetuates puppy mills and uneducated backyard breeders. Anne?
Both excellent points. First of all, on puppy mills, this is just such an important point for people to understand. There are breeders and there are breeders. And so every time John said breeder, I think he used the adjective good because it sure makes a difference. When you go to the puppy store, and those still exist, although thankfully they're declining, you are probably purchasing a dog who was bred at a puppy mill, which means that dog in that typical situation may have not seen anybody, any person, have be completely unsocialized, and was bred from a male and a female dog who were kept in small cages their whole lives, and they never saw anybody. Really terrible situations in terms of condition, but also in terms of the lack of humaneness in caring for animals, but also it leads to just no basis in the kind of behavior strengths that you want to see in your dog as your dog grows older. As to health, it's the flip side of John's point, and I know he would agree with it. Just as good breeding has bred good qualities, both health and behavior, in certain kinds of dogs, overbreeding and restrictions on breeding have really created tremendous health problems in some breeds. And it's actually a fact that in order to get your quote-unquote registration, your special brand that yours is an official this breed or that breed, it actually isn't even allowed to come from a gene pool outside sort of the basic dogs that are already in there. Again, we know from people that breeding the same genes over and over again is not good. And so I was just looking up some numbers on this. The prediction is that 60% of all golden retrievers will die from cancer. Now, golden retrievers are great dogs, but we're breeding them in such a way that they are prone to cancer. Greyhounds, bone cancer. Scottish terriers, bladder cancer. Mm. These dogs with the smush noses that we've bred, the English bulldogs and so on, you know, super cute. But the fact is they have respiratory problems because of we've bred noses that actually don't now work for what they were designed to do. So it is just so important to think not just about the individual fit of the dog for your family, but also systemically, what are you contributing to here, and are you contributing to a sustainable, sound, wise way for the millions of people who have dogs in our society to get them?
Yeah, John, I know you're only with us for a couple more minutes, so give us your thoughts on that.
I think it's, you know, to get back to the AKC, you know, the Westminster Kennel, not the AKC, but the Kennel Club, I think bears some responsibility for what Anna's talking about, because, you know, I think you don't want to generalize about all breeders or all anything. You know, some breeders are wonderful and really promote health. A lot of breeders are terrible. We live in a capitalist culture where dogs are sold like cereal increasingly over the Internet without any restrictions or guidance or regulation of any kind. When you breed dogs for show, like happens at the Kennel Club, and the breeders start tailoring dogs to look a certain way, they're not breeding for health. They're breeding for looks. Hmm. They're breeding for bone structure.
Yeah.
They're inbreeding in some cases.
Right.
And the dog wins the Kennel Club, and they make millions of dollars on the breed. You know, that's where a lot of trouble comes out of purebred dogs, you know, when the idea of showing them in this way for particular quirks of how they look or color. I've had people come up to me on the street with my border collie and say that he matches their furniture. Where can they buy one?
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
It happens all the time.
No.
Oh, so no. You need to be careful. At the same time, you know, there are people who drive rescue dogs up from the South and give them away to people. Nobody knows what they're like or where they come from. So there's got to be some process. You know, a good breeder, a reputable breeder, is a great place to get a dog. A humane society with the standards that Anne is talking about is a great place to get a dog. There's got to be something knowledgeable and thoughtful in between you and the process.
Mm-hmm.
Some place where they're going to ask you questions and give you a process rather than simply, here, take the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever that is a good place to go. And you know, this is such an unregulated, diverse universe. You know, you really can't generalize about anything. You know, there's just good and bad everything, and you have to be thoughtful about it.
Yeah. Now, I found this online. Is there, I don't even know what the title was, Bedlam Farm Checklist for Prospective Dog Owners, which I thought was very helpful, John.
I don't remember that, but now that you ring the bell.
Well, you're so prolific. How would you remember?
I know, I'm surprised by my own insight.
It was very well written, John.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have to go look that up.
I guess you will. At any rate, I direct people to that. John doesn't know he wrote it, but it's worth reading if you're thinking about getting a dog. And how are you? Everything's fine?
Everything is great. I'm having a great time.
Good.
I mean,
good.
Someday I'm involved in writing about the Central Park carriage horses, which they're trying to ban.
Yeah.
Very interesting story.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll.
Anyway, it's a great conversation. I really appreciate your having me. It's great to talk to you and Ann.
Yeah, great to talk to you, John. John Katz with us for part of the show, best-selling author. He's been with us many times before with all of his books, and the latest one that he wrote is really a love story. It's about Frida, but it's also about his love for Maria, his now wife. So we recommend that you go to that. We'll continue with Anne and start taking your many phone calls. Our conversation prompted by the decision by Westminster to involve non-purebred dogs, mixed breed dogs, in their agility competition at the dog show this Sunday. And it got us thinking, you know, something. If you love dogs, you think about, do I get a mixed breed dog? I know it's been true in my life that my absolutely best dogs have been mixed breed dogs. They've been smart and they've been healthy, but I've had both too. I have a purebred dog now. So we're looking at this whole issue and how it plays into the huge number of animals who are in shelters in this country. And we're continuing our conversation with Ann Reed, who is the director of the Wisconsin Humane Society. We also have Beetle with us in the studio, who's 2 months old, and Beetle loves her toys. Hi, Beetle. Do you love your toys? Baby really loves the toys. Beetle is going to be up for adoption on Wednesday morning. So we urge you to go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dent Show, and see her picture, or also go to WIHUMANE.org to find out all the dogs that are available there. To your calls momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ann Reed is with us now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. She is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Humane Society, Wisconsin's oldest and largest animal welfare organization. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Nick in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I love that you do this show. I've wanted a lab all my life. And my wife is from rural Michigan. She grew up on the KSRA Air Force Base up in the UP. And they've got really bad problems with dogs up there. But she saw a sign up someplace that they were giving away free puppies that were labbed. And the mother's killing off the pups. So we got our dog at 4 weeks old. And he's a black lab, chocolate lab, husky mix. He's got the best fur in the world. Like, he's so soft in the sun. He's got red highlights. And everybody said that we're going to have a lot of problems from the socialization because of 4 weeks. But we phoned a school up in the UP that she said, well, he's kind of young, but we'll put him in class anyways. That's the best dog I've ever had. I mean, the kids can do anything they want to him, and he doesn't even care. The cat will even come up and slap him in the nose. Hmm. He looks up, he puts his head back down and goes back to sleep. I mean, I'll never get another pure breed dog again. I'll keep getting them from, like, you know, kennels and stuff because it's just terrible how people treat animals.
And
oh, that's a terrific. Well, first of all, Nick, you saved that dog's life. Thank you so much. That's a very poor start for a dog to get separated from mom so soon. You know, to me, this story is another. Every dog is an individual story. Mm-hmm. You can do all the right things and end up with a dog that's different from what you expected. You can have a dog who had all the wrong things happen and end up with the best dog ever. So a lot of it is the luck, is the love that Nick and his family clearly put into raising this great dog. But some of it's just, wow, isn't it amazing? Just like people, that a creature who came through such a tough time could end up being so great.
Yeah. And some of it is true. You have classes, I know, at the Humane Society. I know that John's book, Frida, the dog that he wrote about last, was one tough dog. I mean, unbelievably tough. And with the right amount of training and knowing what you're doing, but you have to really devote the time. You can have an exceptional dog, can't you?
We are very focused on positive training as an approach. Number one, because the research clearly shows us that it works. And number two, because it builds the relationship between you and your dog as you work together, which is the whole reason you got a dog in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we have seen tremendous things happen. Classes aren't the best place for every dog. Sometimes it's one-on-one work that will better address what you need, and sometimes classes are overwhelming for some dogs. But we love our graduations and see those dogs, anything from puppy class to therapy dog. It's just so much fun to see the difference that it makes in the dog and in the relationship between dog and human.
Yeah. Thank you, Nick, very much for the call. And we go to Anna Liss from Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I guess you talked a little bit already about the animal rescue, the rescue groups. I really had a bad experience with that, and it's still you know, kind of hurts when you think about it. But some of these people really make you feel really badly if you don't believe that you can save every animal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about the Humane Society or anything like that. I'm talking about the individual breed rescues. And I did take a rescue dog with a collie, and from a woman I knew who had had a lot of beautiful collies herself and was doing collie rescue. And this dog had such hostility towards other dogs. I tried everything. I'd had dogs myself. I've had four different dogs over time, and I took him running in the country. I tried, you know, dog training, Patricia McConnell kinds of things. I wanted to get him into maybe like doggy daycare, so for playing or something, but they told me at a very reputable place when they brought other dogs, and they said, you cannot bring your dog here because he cannot, he's aggressive towards other dogs. And ultimately, he jumped the fence in my backyard and bit the neighbor's dog. And so that was, and I did have him put down at that time, but it's a painful experience. And,
right.
And you think because you've had experience with animals that maybe you can take care of any one of them, but in my case, that was not true.
Mm-hmm. Your comments on rescue groups, Ann?
First, thank you for your efforts to help that dog, and don't feel bad. Behavior, aggression in a large dog and aggressive behavior in a large dog is often not reasonably manageable by anybody. And then there are those of us who might have a dog that it's just not manageable by us. And safety is important. Safety is paramount. And we have to keep that in mind every day. And that leads to very difficult decisions sometimes because we have to try to predict as best we can. We can't send any animal out into a home that we don't believe is safe and will be safe, and it makes these decisions very hard. What I would say about rescue groups is exactly what Annalise said. There's no way to generalize across any group of people, and this is certainly one of them. You know, there's animal welfare is an area that seems to attract a lot of emotional energy. There's a lot of finger pointing. There's a lot of this one doesn't do it right or that one doesn't do it right.
Right.
When we just feel so strongly that lots of different groups are trying to do their best on various levels of resources, of size, of focus, of approach, of philosophy. There's room for a lot of that. But in the end, we all have to be sure that families are safe when we send dogs home.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the call. And let's go to Peggy in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. I've been breeding Labradors for, over 20 years now, and I show them, and my husband is a waterfowler, and I teach obedience classes and do behavioral stuff, and, you know, kind of have made this a career over my lifetime. And I guess what I'm seeing now, I don't do a lot of breeding. I do a couple litters a year, maybe. Last year I didn't even do a litter. But what I'm seeing is this tendency with people to be so stuck on the exact date they want a dog and the exact look and temperament, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of variation there, you know, to fit the needs of the dog. And, you know, one thing I tell people, because I don't do a lot of breeding and I do referrals to other breeders, is, you know, find a breeder that you can work with, that you're comfortable with. This first year that you have a puppy, especially if you're a first-time puppy owner, can be very trying, and you need somebody that you have good communication with and that you can rely on for help if you need it. Somebody close by. If, you know, I don't like to sell my dogs across the country anymore because I can't help people if they do have any difficulties. And then I have to rely on other breeders to maybe help out or try to find them trainers and that kind of thing. And I see this, you know, these, especially in Labradors, these large volume breeders now that are doing like, oh my gosh, 6-7 litters a year.
Ooh,
how
my.
Can you possibly socialize puppies?
Right.
In that litters.
Right.
You have three puppies. I know people who breed dogs that are, the puppies never get out of the cage, and they're getting rid of them at 6 weeks. And if they have puppies that aren't sold in the litter, well, how about taking two without explaining the ramifications of this to people? And then those people end up either calling me for behavioral issues or in my obedience classes, and I'm trying to do the corrective work. That, you know, really, the AKC needs to do more education, first of all, on rescues and on their purebreds.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to, you know, kind of put a line on some of these high-volume breeders. They don't all look like puppy mills.
Thank you very much for the call, Peggy. Ann?
Well, if more breeders were like Peggy, we wouldn't be having the kind of conversations that we're having now. Mm-hmm. The fact is that there's a higher demand for puppies in the world than there is the number of breeders of that level of attention to what it is that they're doing. Mm. And that's what has generated these other sources that are so troublesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Email that has come in from Racine, who says, listeners should not pass by the pit bull just because of the way they look or their reputation. We have a wonderful pit bull from Milwaukee Animal Control. What do you say about pit bulls?
Thank you, thank you, thank you for saying that. I'm so glad you wrote in. Pit bull terriers are great dogs, and this is a fact that is just not understood. Even among people who otherwise love animals, there are so many preconceptions that have grown up around this group of dogs. And you know, it's historically we can see it traveling. It used to be Dobermans, and before that it was German Shepherds, and people, you know, there used to be proposed laws banning German Shepherds. We'd never think about that now, but today the dog that's really suffering from negative stereotypes is the Pit Bull Terrier. We have many, many of them in both the Milwaukee and Racine shelter systems. At any given time, we have a number on our adoption floor. We look as carefully for behavior issues and health issues in our Pit Bull Terriers as we do in others, and we make sure that we feel confident and safe about every single one that's on our floor. But once they get out there, every animal on our adoption floor has as long as it takes to go home, and we need that to be fast so we have room for the next animal we want to help to come in. And so to be able to make that pitch for Pit Bull Terriers is great. Thanks for sending
Why do you have so many?
Frankly, right now in Milwaukee, because the primary source of breeding is in low-income areas, and spay-neuter rates in low-income areas are so much lower than they are in neighborhoods with better resources in our city. So if you go to West Allis, Cudahy, Shorewood, you're going to see spay-neuter rates of about 70-80% of pets are spayed or neutered, which is great. And that means that shelters are seeing a very manageable number of those animals homeless at any given time. We're doing an important outreach program right now in Milwaukee's Central City, focusing on the 53206 zip code, and we're finding that animals that we meet in that neighborhood, and we've now seen enough that I feel confident about this number. Spay neuter rate overall is 9%, and for pit bull terriers it's 4%, which means that the proportion of pit bull terriers coming into the shelter system as opposed to all other groups is rising, and these are fantastic dogs. One of the things that gives me a really strong ray of hope is as people come to shelters, they're seeing pit bull terriers next to every other dog they came in to see, making eye contact, falling in love, and taking that dog home to Shorewood and Fox Point and Cudahy and West Allis and St. Francis. So more and more people all over the city are meeting these dogs for the first time and falling in love with their neighbor's dog, their coworker's dog, their cousin's dog. And I think that will change things over time as we all start to come in contact with these great dogs.
Let's go next to Randy in Sauk County. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. And your first guest and this guest talked about a process. We had a great experience with a rescue animal when the greyhound tracks were closing. A track had turned over their files to a society, and we had turned in an ad in the paper a number of years prior to this event that we would take a dog from this track. And they contacted us and wondered if we were so interested, and of course we were. And so the individual, a volunteer from the society, began asking us questions. When was the family home? And so they brought the dog on a weekend, and when the family was all home. And long story short, dog was with us 11 or 12 years, and all through raising the family, many pictures of Christmases and a new home and whatever. And I just think what a terrible thing. And I remember the individual said, now I'll call back in 2 weeks, and if this is not working out, we'll come after the dog. And I said, oh, what will you do? Oh, he said, well, this dog didn't work out at the previous placement. We'll euthanize this dog. And I said, oh, that's too bad or whatever. He said, yeah, we have so many to place. We'd rather not have the dog unsuccessful in the community or whatever now. And so I got thinking, think of how terrible that would have been. It was such a wonderful animal, and the process was so successful, you know, and to get the dog when we were all at home.
Right.
It was such a great process and so on. They were so thoughtful the way they did it.
Yeah. Thank you, Randy, very much for your call. Randy's a happy dog.
You can hear the
I
love
know,
in his voice.
I know, can't you? You really can.
That Greyhound story is a great example of how some of these specific breed rescue groups are not only doing a good job for their breed day to day, but stepping up when there's a specific need. Mm-hmm. And I remember very well when the Dairyland Park closed and people would call me, what are you doing about it, thinking that all these dogs were going to be hitting shelters. But in fact, the private Greyhound Rescue Group did all or almost all of that placement, and it just shows their devotion to a wonderful breed.
Interesting, yeah. Thank you, Randy, very much for your call. More calls in a moment. We're talking about, it's kind of hard to specify what we're talking about. We did the show because Westminster decided to allow mixed breeds into their, some would say, snooty competition. And we're talking about whether or not there is too much snootiness with purebred dogs, if there's a place for them, allowing mixed breeds into that. But it's also an indication of the number of dogs, mixed breed and purebreds, who are in shelters all over this country and why it is that they wind up there and what it is you can do to give them home. So that's part of what we're discussing. We have Beetle with us, and Beetle is a two-month-old shepherd terrier mix and absolutely loves to play. This dog loves toys and is cute as can be. We'll put a picture. There is a picture, KP said, on our Facebook page already of Beetle, who will be up for adoption Wednesday. Wednesday, Beetle will be up for
She looked
adoption.
Up when you said that.
Did she really?
Wednesday? It was cool.
Oh, Beetle, Wednesday. Let us know what happens to you on Wednesday, Beetle. Beetle wants to talk on the microphone. Ann Reed is also with us. Ann has been here before, and she is the director of the Humane Society, Wisconsin Humane Society, executive director. And we're talking about how you get dogs from there, the dogs that are there, and the differences between purebred and mixed breeds and different temperaments and all of that. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we welcome more phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. I got Beetle in my lap now. Hello, Beetle. You want to go now? Okay, wait. Hold on. Beetle's got to go down. There you go, honey. Okay. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask, do people come to get puppies? Beetle is 2 months old, but there are wonders to behold in older dogs as well, aren't there, Anne?
My next dog will be an adult dog.
Will it?
I think of it often. My current dog is a fabulous purebred dog from a very good breeder. Got that dog just before I took this job. But I fell victim to a belief that a lot of people have, and that's that if you raise a puppy exactly right, you'll get a dog that you built and raised, and it'll be exactly what you wanted. Again, we would never say that about people. We would never say, if you raise your child exactly according to this, then here is the child you will get. And so my dog is a great dog, but he's more nervous around people than is really, even though I did a lot of things exactly right.
I'm sure you
right.
did. Yeah.
But I'll tell you, my next dog, I'm gonna talk to the behavior folks at the Wisconsin Humane Society, and I'm going to say, help me understand which dog is rock solid, which dog can go into any room with me and always be calm and always be.
Yes.
And we'll know because it's an adult. You can get to know an adult and know what you're getting in both people and dogs. With children, they have to grow into themselves, and sometimes that can be unpredictable, even if you do everything the way you want.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. You must be, you must want to have hundreds of dogs as well, though. You must see dogs and say, oh, honey, come on home.
You know what I always say to that? Remember, every dog on our adoption floor has as long as it takes to go home. I always think, and for all of us who are involved in the organization, if we take one home, that's one. If we run the organization the way we want to and really do the work well, that's 10,000.
You got it. Let's go to, wrong line here. Let's go to Charlie. Hi, Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, great. Thank you for having this show because my dog recently went blind in both eyes. We don't know the cause. The ophthalmologist, you know, they couldn't find an infection. But he is, you know, he's getting better. But our question was, you know, it doesn't make sense to get a second dog. Would a second dog add companionship and get along with the dog? Because currently, if our dog, when he was blind and we took him to where he normally goes, the activity was actually too much for him. And the interaction just was too anxiety provoking for him. So the question was, would it be good to get another dog? Would that be a good situation with one dog already blind? The second dog, if you get one, is it better to get a puppy or an older dog, as you were talking before? And three, the same breed, or does it matter?
My heart goes out to you guys with your dog and supporting your dog through that transition. It is amazing once an animal becomes accustomed to blindness how well they do function. And I'll just say we've had occasion several times to find homes for blind animals. And we find that people welcome them into their homes and they do very well in their homes. This is something that I'd encourage you to call either us, 414 Animals, or some other expert in your local animal welfare organization to learn more. But in general, my first take is that the decisions that you're making are less about the blindness than they are about your dog and this potential second dog. So my answer is going to leave blindness out of it, really. We are happy to introduce dogs that are already resident in the home with a potential new dog at the shelter. We have a great sort of system and approach to that. We also encourage you to introduce two dogs in your home. And if it doesn't work out, then it didn't work out. You want these dogs to get along and get along well. But, you know, just as an individual person might respond differently to a new child coming into their home versus a new adult, some would like the one, some would like the other. It really depends on your dog, and our dogs have great ways of letting us know. So what you need is somebody from your local animal welfare organization to guide you through what a good introduction looks like. The last bit of your question, breed to breed, whether two dogs will get along, in our experience, rarely makes any difference at all. Gender can sometimes make a difference, but breed to breed, because each animal is an individual, really doesn't matter. You see mastiffs getting along great with chihuahuas and great with other mastiffs.
As we found on the Super Bowl last night, little puppies getting along with horses.
Wasn't that the cutest
thing? Oh, it's so darling. It was. Yeah. Thank you, Charlie, very much for your call. Let's go to Carol in Heartland. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm calling because we have a 15-year-old half West Highland Terrier, half American Eskimo. We've had her the whole time, the 15 years. And she's always been a bit on the aggressive side when she's outside of our family. She's bitten over the years, I would say, probably 8 or 9 people. And we're at the point now where she is trying, or she's peeing all over the house. And when we take her into the vet, we have to always have her medicated before they can do anything to her. So my husband and I are thinking that this is the time to have the dog put to sleep. And we're up against the rest of the family. We all love the dog, but is this a time that you consider doing that when they're 15 years old? Mm. They're pretty old, I understand.
You are describing exactly my situation with my first dog, He wasn't quite as beautiful as a Westie and American Eskimo mix must be. She must be a beautiful dog. urinating around the house indicates health sort of mind problems. Of course, aggression is a part of it. But these are the hardest decisions that families have to make. Would I consider it at that point? Yes, you're clearly describing the kinds of things that make people consider it. My own experience with this and gathering together with my friends, I would put down two things. One is you never can be absolutely sure, but you just have to go with your heart. There's a time when you know that a dog isn't happy, and then you can forgive yourself and it's okay.
Yeah. Anne, thank you so much for being with us. Give us the website once again where all the dogs available for adoption are.
WIHumane.org.
All right. And thank you so much for being
Kathleen,
with us.
It was great to be
thank
here.
Thank you. Thanks. Anne Reed, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Humane Society. Beetle, we thank you for being here. You're a very happy, joyful dog and darn cute as well. And Beetle is available for adoption come Wednesday. So go to that site and you can find out more about the two-month-old terrier Shepherd mix, cute as can be. Thanks to KP Whaley for doing this show. He liked doing it too. We love dogs. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned for Central Time coming up next, and they will have a number of important issues that they will be talking about. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network.